From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. There's a certain mythology around the office of sheriff, especially here in the West, the tall, honest lawman who protects the innocent, especially in small rural towns. Well, recently, the image of sheriff in Deschutes County has been anything but a hallmark of integrity and honesty. Today on the show, you'll hear from an OPB reporter who covers Central Oregon and learn about the latest incident that has cast this department in a very unseemly light. Lies, cover-ups, and politics? Yep, this story has it all. Then, in the second part of the show, you'll hear from our own Love Cross about her continuing series, Oregon Ready, about emergency preparedness, and this time, she's going to share her own personal story about the need to be ready for emergencies that crop up. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Another day and another Deschutes County Sheriff's Office controversy. The latest one involves a candidate to become sheriff whose actions, if he were running in another county, might be disqualifying, but in an office that seems to attract controversy, he still could become the next top lawman. Our colleague at OPB now explains. Jen Baides, who is a contributing reporter for OPB. Jen, really great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so... Boy, let's just start with this. Tell our listeners, who is Lieutenant James Mack McLaughlin?
Yeah, so Lieutenant James McLaughlin is a 20-year veteran of the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office. He's also running for sheriff right now, and up until about a month ago, he was the head of SWAT team.
And SWAT factors into this story. So let's kind of, let's talk about... the arrest of a subject. His name was, I believe, is it Paul Akenhurst?
It's Paul Akenhurst.
Akenhurst. Okay. Yeah. What happened there? Talk about the arrest there.
Yes. Yeah, so this all started in February 25th. And that's where Sheriff Candidate Lieutenant James McLaughlin was leading the team that morning to where he knew Paul Akenhurst was staying. Basically, over a dozen officers surrounded the small home in Bend with a five-vehicle convoy, including a military-grade tactical armored vehicle. Paul Akenhurst was wanted on charges stemming from roughly $700 theft, and he wasn't known to be a violent offender. So this show of force from the SWAT team is now something that's under scrutiny by Deschutes County, along with what some of the officers were recorded doing and saying that day.
Yeah, so I guess we're looking at someone who led the SWAT team, and now this, what I think a lot of people might look at and see as overkill. So is the investigation centered on McLaughlin's leadership with regard to this raid, or is there more going on here?
Yeah, definitely. So on that day, McLaughlin was caught on the homeowner's security cameras talking with another officer who was making comments about how he wanted to like trump up charges against Paul Akenhurst and get the homeowner Kelly Hayes for false reporting. So he was going to say that Akenhurst was, that she reported that he was like burglary charge as well. And after the officer told Lieutenant McLaughlin that, we hear McLaughlin laughing and saying that, you know, he loves how vindictive this officer is being, and that that's such a creative approach. So the homeowner, Kelly Hayes, sees this on her Ring camera. She makes a report to Deschutes County Sheriff's Office about what happened during the arrest. But before that, she actually talked to McLaughlin directly and told him that she'd seen the video. And he apologized, she said, and she said that he had the other officer apologize to her as well. But he never reported it further. And that's what this internal investigation really digs into as well. From the records that we obtained through OPB, we see that they're looking at the fact that he didn't report it farther, that McLaughlin didn't report the video's existence to anybody else, or at least his part in what was said on there. And they say that him and another officer also attempted to basically bury the video.
I want to go.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was just going to say, so some of the charges are dishonesty and also trying to coerce Paul Akehurst into turning over the video so that it wouldn't be made public.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about prior knowledge or relationships, because I'm kind of wondering, has there been any evidence that shows that Lieutenant McLaughlin had some kind of beef with Akehurst? I mean, certainly they pursued him for quite some time. It mm-hmm. you know, to my reading, seems like, wow, they really brought in, and I don't mean this lightly, the big guns to arrest him, and mm-hmm. and then some of the stuff that was caught on the video. I mean, is there any? Yeah, did they go to high school together? I don't even know. I mean, it just seems like there's potentially more here.
Yes, I thought the same thing. I did not find any connection between these two. I will say one of the things that I saw in looking back at arrest reports of Akehurst going back to October of last year of 2025, it seemed like there were two deputies who he had a lot of interactions with, and these are both deputies who were also reportedly at this SWAT arrest.
Okay.
I can't say for certain that these are the same people who are on leave. We only know that McLaughlin is one of the three officers who was placed on paid administrative leave following these events. But it does seem to me that it does seem targeted, right? Like, why go after this person so hard for crimes that, you know, warrants for driving on a suspended license and theft that didn't amount to a whole lot in terms of money?
Yeah.
But if that connection is there or whatever, I can't speculate to it.
Sure. I understand. If you're just joining us, we're talking to a contributing reporter for OPB. Her name is Jen Baitis. Jen, Kelly Hayes, you know, this is the person whose property this arrest occurred on. I think in your story I saw she had actually met McLaughlin before, right? And sort of knew him somewhat and was able to, I don't know, call him up and get an apology, which sometimes I don't know that members of the general public can simply call up the sheriff and say, hey, I didn't like what you did, and get an apology. Any more about their relationship?
Yeah, that is one relationship that I can speak to, actually. I spoke with Kelly Hayes in the months following this incident, and she said that she actually figured out that her and Lieutenant McLaughlin know each other while they were in the midst of the SWAT arrest at her property. So she was talking to the officers through the Ring cameras. She has some around her house and in her garage, I guess. And Lieutenant McLaughlin saw a picture of someone who's like a known acquaintance between them, and through an interaction through the camera realized that he knew her, Kelly Hayes, and she knew him from, I think they had both gone to churches that associated with each other. So she felt after this that she could call him because she felt like they had that personal relationship based on their faith.
Okay. All right. So now let's bring in another character in this saga, and that's the interim sheriff, Ty Rupert. Sort of what's his role in all this, and explain his relationship with McLaughlin, because it is kind of an interesting one.
Yeah. So like McLaughlin, interim sheriff Ty Rupert has been at the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office for decades, I believe. And both of them actually last year, when outgoing Sheriff Kent Vanderkamp announced his sudden retirement, they both applied to be interim sheriff. So up until that point, they had, you know, colleagues working together. Mm-hmm. They also were very much aligned with former Sheriff Kent Vanderkamp. They were vocal supporters of his campaign while he was running. And so the interim sheriff race is the first time that we see these two officers step forward and have to sort of separate from one another in the sense of being political opponents.
Okay. And
now,
yeah, oh, sorry, I was just going to say, no, go ahead. I mean, take it further, because if I read right, now one is going to be investigating the other or something like that.
Right. So now, obviously, and in the fact that we call him Interim Sheriff Ty Rupert. Rupert was the one who was appointed in that contest between him and McLaughlin and a few other people who, you know, threw their hats in the ring to be interim sheriff last year. And so we have this situation where he is now running the department and is in charge of any investigations that come up. And so James McLaughlin, who's also running for sheriff, has this happen. And Rupert decides that the best course of action is actually to hire an outside investigator.
Okay.
To try to kind of create some separation, is what he said politically, between him and McLaughlin and the way that this all plays out.
Okay. So this investigation has started. I believe, like you said, an outside counsel entity is going to investigate McLaughlin. I mean, and of course, this is happening during, I imagine, a campaign. So what has McLaughlin said about this incident? What has he talked to you about or other reporters? Kind of what is his public wording on what's happened and perhaps how it might impact his race to become Deschutes County Sheriff?
Yes. So McLaughlin has categorically denied all allegations. He says that he wishes he could say more, but given the nature of this investigation, it's an internal investigation, he doesn't want to disrupt it. So the only thing that he's able to say publicly is that he denies allegations. He's still actively campaigning, like you said. He's had events around town. I think that everyone would like to hear more.
Yeah, I bet.
And yet we're going to have to wait.
Yeah. I guess, too, that he obviously can say it's an ongoing investigation, so he can't comment. Do we have any idea how long this investigation might last, and might it overlap with the election itself?
No, that's a really great point, and I think we don't. I followed really closely an internal investigation last year into a former political opponent, William Bailey, who ran for sheriff against Vanderkamp. And I think that investigation we're still waiting for a final outcome for it, but it 9-10 months. So to me, it seems possible that it could continue into November, but only time will tell.
Indeed. Well, you've already brought up his name, so let's remind folks about the interesting saga of the former sheriff, Kent Vanderkamp. What happened there?
Yeah, a lot happened there. Kent Vanderkamp ran for sheriff in 2024 against Captain William Bailey. And during the course of that election, it came out that he was under an internal investigation by current sitting sheriff. And that investigation kind of uncovered a previous work history he had at a police department in California, where he'd been terminated. Mm. And it was something that he never reported on any of his applications in Oregon to work at Deschutes County Sheriff's Office. Plus, I think some, that came out during the course of the election. He was still elected. And then a few months later, the district attorney here discovered that he had also lied under oath about his past, not just his past work history, but his education and educational background and certifications he held. So he was placed on a Brady list because of that. And eventually it started an investigation by a state entity, DPSST, to look into taking his badge, which is eventually what happened.
Yeah, and
he cannot be an officer in Oregon ever again.
Yeah, and I think that Brady list, if my memory serves, that basically said that, you know, he wouldn't be allowed to testify because he is seen as an untruthful person or something along those lines.
Yes, yeah, sorry. The Brady list is basically that. It's officers who cannot testify under oath because they were deemed to be, it would be a problem, right, for the district attorneys if they were testifying and then they weren't known to be always truthful.
Sure. Jen, my question here is this. You know, as best you can, I mean, are a lot's happened with Deschutes County Sheriff's Office, and it seems to continue to happen. You got any inklings from leaders, residents, just the general populace about, you know, are they getting kind of sick of this? Is there any effort, I don't know, from just the general voter who is saying we need either better candidates or different candidates, or kind of what might be the general vibe about the sheriff's office throughout Central Oregon?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of frustration among the general population here with the office. And one of the ways I think we see that is the fact that last election, the one between Vanderkamp and William Bailey that I was mentioning, we had really low voter turnout for that race.
Fertile ground for a reporter covering this story, and we really appreciate you coming on and telling us about it. She's Jen Baitis, and she is a reporter, files stories for OPB. Jen, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Let's now talk with our Morning Edition host, Love Cross, about her Oregon Ready series. KLCC's Oregon Ready series focuses on taking small steps towards disaster preparedness, and our own Love Cross has been on her own disaster preparedness journey, and she joins us now to give us an update. Love, what is this? This is like month 7 of your year-long series. How's it going?
Yeah, month 7. It's just flying by. It's going well, Michael, and I have really been learning so much about this topic as I follow the Eugene Water and Electric Board's Pledge to Prepare program. And just to remind listeners, the Pledge to Prepare program is a 12-month program, so it's all about small steps each month that at the end of the 12 months, you should be 2 weeks ready to shelter in place. And that's because in an extreme situation, like, say, a catastrophic earthquake, it could take local, state, and federal agencies about 2 weeks to have resources in place. So as I go through this process, one thing I've heard is that while everyone, you know, pretty much knows that major disasters like wildfires or the eventual Cascadia earthquake are true realities for us here in Oregon, many people just see disaster preparedness as a list of chores, so there's some reluctance or apathy, but I've also learned that any small amount of disaster prep can make a difference, and that's even if it's like a minor inconvenient emergency.
Yeah, and I want to hone in on something you said as I go through this process, because I heard you tell a story this morning during your shift in Morning Edition about how you had to put your own emergency preparedness skills to the test. Tell our listeners what happened.
I sure did, and I was so glad that I had done the steps that I had already taken. So a few weeks ago, I woke up to no running water. A water main on my street in South Eugene had broken. While water was just rushing down the hill outside my house, nothing was coming out of the taps. But thanks to my earlier efforts, I was prepared for exactly this kind of situation. So I grabbed one of my stored water jugs and was able to brush my teeth, wash my face, make coffee and oatmeal, and even flush the toilet. I shared this story with Jenny Damaris, an emergency specialist with eWeb, at a recent disaster preparedness event. And here's what she said.
That is a great example, and you might reference it as dress rehearsal for a real disaster, because having that security and knowing that you are independent and you have the stability that you need to maintain your daily life and daily operations, and if you happen to have kids at home or even pets, you are able to take care of your family. But yeah, it's really about the dress rehearsal for when things are really bad.
She was so right. One simple step I took months ago, just storing some water, really gave me exactly what preparedness is supposed to provide. That's independence and a peace of mind when something unexpected went wrong. And I have to say, Michael, it was very empowering to feel like I was in control of the situation, but of course I had no control over the broken water pipe or when it would be fixed.
Yeah, you know, Love, and something I really like about your series is it's not like you're building some sort of emergency compound. These are fairly small steps that are inexpensive and very doable for pretty much anybody.
That's right. And that's kind of the design of the Pledge to Prepare, you know, 12-month program. And I've come to learn that preparedness isn't really about just stockpiling supplies. It's about giving yourself some options when something goes wrong, something major and something, you know, fairly minor, like what I experienced.
Yeah, and you talked about how you saw Jenny Damaris at a recent disaster preparedness fair. Tell us about your conversation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so earlier this month, I went to an event at the YMCA in Eugene. They had several people that were tabling for their organizations. Of course, eWeb, that's where Jenny was. The American Red Cross had some volunteers there. Eugene Springfield Fire, Lane County Emergency Management, and Eugene MCOM. I did a series, a special on them about their emergency radio communication volunteers earlier of Oregon Ready, and they were all there. So I lingered around, and I was hearing the representatives interact with people who came by to check things out. And the question I heard over and over again from each of those tables was, are you signed up for Lane Alerts? And it was kind of shocking because I'm obviously ensconced in this world right now, but many who came by were like, no, what's Lane Alerts? So if you're listening and you're in that camp, I want you to know that Lane Alerts is the emergency notification system. It's used by local response agencies in Lane County to send critical safety messages. And all 36 counties in Oregon have these kinds of alerts. There's Lincoln Alerts, Deschutes Alerts, Douglas Alerts, and so on. Basically, you sign up, and then in an emergency, you'll receive warnings through text messages, emails, or phone calls, whatever you choose, for events such as wildfires, severe weather, floods, hazardous materials, urgent evacuations, and the like. So that was the main message from those representatives at that disaster preparedness fair. It's very easy to sign up for your county's alert system. A quick online search will take you to your county's emergency management page and find those details how to sign up. And of course, you know, we are smack dab in the middle of wildfire season right now. Things can happen so quickly as far as wildfires are concerned. So having a way for emergency managers to let you know if you need to be ready, be set, or go now is really critical.
So what's next for Oregon Ready?
Well, the Pledge to Prepare list for August has tips for securing your water heater. That could be very important, like in an earthquake. It's not too hard to do. But next month, I'll also be exploring mental health as it pertains to disaster preparedness. Like I said earlier, some really view all of this as just a list of chores. So I'm encountering such a spectrum of how people feel about being prepared. There are those who really cross off every item and maybe even go to some extremes. And those who don't feel the need to take any steps at all. It's the, oh, I'll be fine, or that won't happen to me mindset. So I'll be exploring that from the psychological sense next month.
Well, it's a great series and a lot of great information for people. Love, Cross, thanks so much for doing it. And thanks so much for coming in and talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we talk with a member of the Lane County Sheriff's Office whose new role isn't about arresting people, but about trying to save them when they're lost or missing in the backcountry. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.